topic of this sort of talk is this trying to understand turbulent behavior in conformal fluids, and I'd say why in a second. I should mention some collaborators at different levels. So Federico Carrasco is a student in Argentina who's doing a lot on the second part of the talk, trying to understand turbulence on from what would be the global coordinates point of view. Ajay Singh works some on the stuff that relates more to the Poincaré setup. And I, at different times and whatever, I've talked a lot with Rob and Oscar Rola. So we're, to some level, all accomplices in this, but all the mistakes are that I say are all just my own. Oh, and I also should also thank Martin for some of you, Martin for me. I've also been chatting with him quite a bit on this, and so some of the talks, some of the material of the talk is related to discussions that we have to have. So the outline, so I'll just try to give some motivational statements, or AKA why I'm doing this, numerical techniques. And this is for the people that come from the other camp, not the numerical camp, just to emphasize that the particular setup for the kind of questions we're trying to answer in this work, this is something you can do very easily if you just take into account a few minor details. In particular, for the case of the simulations on the torus, this is something that you can do. The code, I'm sure you can write it within a week. And all simulations that it present for that point have not been using, have not required supercomputers. I give results on or observations in both these two approaches or these two fronts, and I'll just have some discussions. I have also need to warn you that this talk may cause nausea. This is typically the case for all my talks, but at least in this case, I have I have an excuse, and if anyone needs, I have a little plastic bag. Okay, so the motivation. So the first, I mean, I started thinking about this just to try to understand what the heck some of you are talking about, not knowing anything about ADS-CFT. I just was trying to look for a problem where I can get my hands on and then try to use it as an excuse to get myself into it a little bit more. And so I started thinking on this gravity fluid correspondence, talking to also lots of people here that I mentioned. So in particular, I just latch on to a problem that I think I could do with the kind of tools I know I can implement rather easily. So just taking this motivation that the near equilibrium regime of some field theory should be describable in the long wavelength perturbation case for by essentially relativistic fluid dynamics. And so one can write a stress gradient tensor, do a gradient expansion that applies for the case where typical length scales and the temperature are much larger than one. And just simply solving the say, Navier-Stokes equations or equations like related to them, one should be able to look for that or to understand some dynamics. So the thing that was bugging in the back of my mind is I know the turbulence is pervasive in hydrodynamics. So why is it that turbulence never called in when discussing the possible instabilities on the bulk side? Or at least when it is brought in, it's brought in some way that to me sounded strange, and I'll tell you why as we go along.
Wait, go back. Why do you say there's dubious system structure?
Yeah, so good. I was going to say something later, but let me say it now. So to zeroth order or to first order, to zeroth order, so no gradients involved, what you just have is a perfect fluid. If you look at the equations that you get when you ignore that, that's a perfectly nice hyperbolic system. If you add, and this, Roberto alluded to this in his talk, if you add now the next order, and you compute, you check what the equations of motion you get with this, now they're no longer hyperbolic, there is a piece that is parabolic, and every time you add an extra order, then you bring in, you solve problems that you solved with the previous order, but you bring some new ones. So at any truncated order of the full expansion, you may not end up with a system that is kind of dubious as to how you're going to implement that. But I'm going to look for a particular case where I don't have to worry about that. At least I want to argue that way. So at least so first, from the duality, from dual point, from the gravity side, this artifact of the dubious kind of structure of the equation. So you end up, it's just an artifact of the fact that one is stopping at some mean order. If one looks at what is the theory from the gravity point of view, there should be no problem.
This fact that fluids are dubious in this expansion just means that you shouldn't. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to truncate.
That's what I'm saying.
Forgetting gravity, even from the fluid point of view, it just doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
As soon as those terms become important, you need all of them. I mean, it's the usual thing with a.
Well, not even that. No, I would go beyond that. So I could imagine putting, say, just bringing the viscous term and making them extremely small. Now, if I look for generic perturbations of my resulting evolution equations, then I have a problem right there, just because it's a big hyperbolic parabolic system. So one thing is the physical effect, and the other one is the effect that will have to a generic perturbation, regardless how small they are.
What's that problem?
So this is the problem of where you're going. This is a physical statement. That's your statement. Mine is more a mathematical statement. Yeah. But I don't disagree with what you're saying.
In the relativistic case, you have higher derivative in time also.
That's right.
In the non-relativistic, you don't.
Exactly. Yes. So there is a definite difference there.
If you want to call the fluid expansion dubious, you should also, of course, call the gravity dubious, because Einstein gravity is just the first term of the expansion.
Well, Einstein gravity is providing the full theory of which you, once you introduce the gradient function, you end up seeing this. So on the gravity side, I have a complete theory.
But
in fact, I'm going to exploit that.
One has a well-defined initial value problem.
Exactly.
The other one doesn't. So
furthermore,
a computer, the other one you cannot.
Furthermore, and this is related to what you were saying 2 days ago, on the fluid side, I have weird phenomena that if I'm going to try to do the best possible job on the numerical front, I have to work to deal with them. So like shocks, rare refractions, these are things that you're going to model numerically need very delicate numerical techniques. But again, on the gravity side, you know that those are completely artifacts. You don't expect shocks and rare refractions. We also always expect that these phenomena are just an artifact of the particular mathematical equations we use to describe fluids, but we don't expect them to be in general because viscosity will smear any shock or possible effect like this. But from the gravity side, they shouldn't be there to begin with. So and this has to do with the fact that Einstein's equations are linearly degenerate, while not the hydrodynamic equations. But that's just a fancy mathematical term.
Can I ask a question? One thing always confuses me with fluids. When you talk to fluid guys who send, like, they always bring in force, because the stuff that they're basically getting at the end always is very sensitive to forcing.
As far as turbulence is concerned, or as far as what?
As far as, let's say, even nonlinearities, shocks, or things like that. So they always point this out. Now, I don't know if this is a generic statement. Maybe it's generic for turbulence. But let's say for the other things, like you said, like
In the context of turbulence, it gives you a well-controlled way to probe your system.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of it, when we're starting to say neutron stars.
So you would not worry about it for shocks, let's say.
I would not worry. No, it has nothing to do with that. In fact, the shocks is just a fact that the propagation speeds of different perturbations are determining on the state of your fluid, and then you just have that, just as we have problems driving on the 401 and hitting some jet, some traffic jam there. Which happens more often than I would like. this is kind of the theme of what we've been discussing so all along, is that one could learn something from one side and with respect to something that maybe learn more easily on the other side. And most of the stuff we've been talking about is trying to infer something on the field theory side by grabbing onto something we understand on the gravity side. But actually, I'm going to come on the opposite direction. I want to look for a well-defined problem that I can study in 2+1 dimensions, and for reasons I'll say in a few minutes, and then try to poke holes in what we think we understand on the gravity side. And I think, at least from my point of view, either we already have strong evidence for that, or I'm very confused. So on the gravity side, we know of something that is very easy to latch on and try to see what is the dual in one case. The other one is if you have some funny thing happening one side, let's say on the field theory side, and then try to look for that on the gravity side, and in particular, any sort of instabilities. And so on the gravity side, we know of two types already, and we have discussed that at length here, super radiance and this turbulent gravitational behavior tied to the work of Bisson and Rostrowski and also Diaz, Horowitz, and Santos. The interesting observation here is that both instabilities are qualitatively behaving or qualitatively behaving exactly the same way, regardless of the number of dimensions you have, as long as you start with 3 plus 1, 3 spatial dimensions, and you go up in dimensions. However, if I go to the fluid side, there is a difference. So we're going to have, I mean, some funny behavior could be turbulence. The turbulence is a pervasive instability. But if I have completely difference where we're doing something in 2 plus 1 on the boundary side, or 3 and above. So then I got I'm puzzled because we can point to a particular instability here that doesn't have an analog as far as we know on this side. Of course, one can wave one hand and say, well, the first is all the things we know on 2 plus 1 turbulence behaving different than 3 plus 1 and above is essentially with Newtonian fluids and with realistic equation of state, not these conformal equation of state that are induced by the duality. So the very first question we want to address is where things like this. And so this is a hurricane coming live somewhere there in my past life and having had to evacuate because of one of these. You appreciate that actually our atmosphere is governed by essentially two-dimensional flow because the height of the atmosphere plays essentially no role. So this is an example of hurricanes. This is the giant spot in Jupiter also showing up and showing these vortices are able to arise from very small perturbations and they're extremely long-lived. So we may be missing something, and then I was very excited or interested when I thought, okay, this maybe people haven't raised this before, but actually they have, and Van Bramstock already wrote a paper on this, kind of pointing this out, and actually raising the case that the same statement I just made, that we know these kind of things when you're Newtonian fluids, but no one has shown, as far as I know, that this is true in the relativistic case with conformal fluids. So that was the first question we wanted to address. So the TEP setup, anyone, as I said, of you could sit down and in a very short time write a code, or you can ask me, I'll give you that code for free right now if you want. So the two typical things you need to worry about when you're doing hydrodynamics is, first, you need to express the equations in conservation form. That's very important to maintain energies and global norms in general. So essentially what we're saying is if this is the kind of equation system you're trying to evolve, and in here you have, say, your energy density and your fluid and your fluid velocity, you'd be tempted perhaps in writing that equation as a series of time derivatives of your main fields equal to some sources and then evolve that. Rather than that, what this says is try to, as much as you can, keep this kind of structure, the time derivative of something that is related to your variables plus gradient or divergence of fluxes equal generically, or will you have zeros here for the flat case, for the Poincaré patch kind of problems, but otherwise on the sphere you might have a source. But by and large, if you try to keep this, this is the best structure. So you might have to deal with some densitized variables, and then your primitive variables, the variables you're actually interested in, will have to be obtained by some suitable simple transformations.
What if you're saying that you evolve the stress energy tensor?
You evolve the densitized stress energy tensor. And at any spot and at any time, whenever you need, because for instance here, you may need to know what the density and fluid velocity is, you transform back and forth. Okay. That usually requires some delicate evaluations, but it's not a problem, especially for this case. And the other thing you typically worry about is employing these high resolution shot capturing methods to be able to do a good job at this kind of weird phenomena. But the good thing is that in this case, this shouldn't happen. And this is where most of the complication is. Doing this is just rewriting the equation this particular way and then iterating like that. This one is actually much more complicated, but you don't need to do this. So the fact that we don't expect shocks allows us to ignore the second point. The other thing we're going to be thinking about the 2 plus 1 problem. And so if we expect the cascade to lead to longer wavelengths, we also can do this ignoring the viscous terms. And so we can keep a very well-defined hyperbolic system. Of course, to check that the solution is the one obtained is not sensitive to these viscous terms, because it could be just by ignoring it when actually it's changing the physics. What we do as a check is we introduce some numerical viscosity by hand and then check that nothing changes in the solution we're obtaining. So let me.
Sorry to interrupt again. So this numerical viscosity you put by hand doesn't break the character of your PDEs.
It does to some degree, but what you do is you hide it as a very small factor that only essentially turns on if you actually do cascade to shorter scales. And this is a typical thing that we do all the time in any numerical implementation, regardless of the technique you're using. So you're more used to these spectral methods. They use this anti-aliasing, which is precisely the same thing. In our case, we use Kreis-Soliger dissipation. It amounts to the same thing. The high-frequency modes of your solution that you're completely misrepresenting, you actually want to kind of slowly decay. So let's start with the simplest case. So we're thinking first on the Poincaré front. We're going to simplify things, right? Imagine that we're doing things on R2. We're going to take a torus of size L squared. We're going to take an initial data where the density is 1. We have some velocity in the x direction. We're going to perturb it. So if we have this, we just have a stationary solution. So we're going to introduce a small perturbation. We're going to put no velocity in the y direction. And then let me show you some of the movies. So these movies are huge. I should say a few things. So because let me start this. So this is one particular case. So the speed, let me tell you what I'm doing here. So here I'm going to compute the vorticity. So turbulence is extremely difficult to understand. There are tons of jokes out there. I'm not going to tell anyone because they forget about that. But vorticity, so when turbulence sets in, one particular way, so you typically start with something that is symmetric. You introduce a small orchestron symmetry. You introduce some small perturbation. The turbulence will just completely break that symmetry. But once the turbulence is well developed, some partial symmetry gets recovered in the form of these vortices that you find. And then a lot of the efforts nowadays to understand turbulence is to try to understand the vortices themselves. So here, in particular, what I'm going to be showing first is just the vorticity that you get in the fluid flow as the simulation goes on. So initially, we have, as I said, it's just a velocity that was only going in the x direction, and it has some small sinusoidal perturbation. We're just going to let it go. Because the movie takes a long time, we only save every so often in the first, say, 200 crossing times, and then we show it more often just to illustrate what's going on. This is in a torus.
What's 3+1?
2+1. The other reason we don't want to do 3+1 is first, so the first question we want to answer is whether turbulence does show the same qualitative behavior that we know from the Newtonian studies. So I could do two things. I could do 3+1 or 2+1. 2+1 is cheaper to do. If it is true that it goes to longer scales, then it's going to be even simpler, because then I don't have to refine or try to resolve these smaller and smaller scales that the cascade will take me to. This, because 2+1 takes me the opposite direction, it should be fine, and this is what we're trying to find out here.
So in 2+1, you're looking at the entropy cascade or the energy? Which way are you
going? I'm not going to look at the entropy cascade. I'm going to just look at energy or vorticity. In particular, most of the stuff I'm going to be showing is the vorticity.
What's the typical amplitude of the velocity here?
So in this case, I'm using 0.1, the speed of light. But we've done 0.5, the speed of light, and 0.01, the speed of light. In all cases, you see something qualitatively the same. I'll show you some plots soon to try to discuss what is the take-home message of all this. So then it's a whole mess. And then this begins to set. It's already obviously a longer scale than the initial stuff you saw. And then just to show that how things can get completely messy, at some point you say, well, this is the end state of that system. It will just stay like that. But then if you keep waiting a little bit, then it's going to change. It's going to acquire a mind of its own. And then now you have a completely different pattern. And you keep waiting, this keeps changing. So yeah, I cannot watch all the movies because I actually have motion sickness, and some of this get me sick. I'm not kidding. So this was for a perturbation that had, again, it's 0.1 the speed of light, and the delta, the perturbing, so the background velocity was 0.1 the speed of light, and I'm perturbing with a 10% of that. So if you perturb with now a 30% perturbation, things just happen in qualitatively the same way, but the time scales get shorter. I mean, things develop in a much at a much faster rate.
So that's when you increase the velocity.
I increase the perturbation
to
the velocity.
Okay.
So if you wait really long time, it never settles into anything.
No.
It keeps going,
but I'll tell you something, because if we're really trying to make a contact with what you would see on something that would be described on a Poincaré patch, I shouldn't be doing this in the torus, because here we're talking about already 700 crossing times of the torus, so there is something is amiss here with respect to the long-term picture. So let me just
turn. No, you can put the field theory on a torus.
Well, okay. If I'm looking at that one, then I would have to put the field theory in the torus. But I have a maximum wavelength that I could represent in that torus.
Yeah. No. But I'm just saying. I think that was perfectly fine view of what you're doing.
Okay. Fine. I'm just trying to make contact with
the hydrodynamics of the field theory, right?
So
the hydrodynamics of the field theory is very difficult. It's just hydrodynamics. Yeah. I'm just saying that it's the Poincaré chart. You don't have to take the field theory on Minkowski's base, you can take it on the torus, and then
okay.
What you're doing is the field theory.
That's a good point.
I mean, the hydro dual.
What do we know in that case, say, for the cross? So what would be the dual on the gravity side? Would it be a black hole, a black brain on the torus?
It's a structural black hole that you just identified.
And what do the quasi-null modes in that case look like? Because that's a puzzle I have.
The high frequency ones look the same, and the low frequency ones.
Well, let's wait till the end, because this is going to relate to the questions I want to raise at the end.
It's true, actually. I guess you don't have
and you don't really have a hydrodynamic behavior when you appear in a torus.
Okay. Well.
Well.
But on the other hand, there's infinite time. So, I mean, it depends on how big the torus is, I think.
That's right. Let me move along, and then we're going to get back to this all these sort of questions. So this is the same thing now, but I put a higher L perturbation, and then very quickly you have this, and then you clearly see that generates some small scales, but very quickly the scales just go into longer one. Anyways, so what do we do with all this? Let me go back to this. So the first thing is to try to get this to show up. It's here. Okay, so here I'm just showing, remember in this case I'm studying, I'm not putting any velocity in the y direction, in the orthogonal direction. And so it looks as if it's a very good proxy to see the onset of turbulence, because before, we had some basic background flow, which kind of obscured things. So this turbulence has to rise sufficiently high to introduce a small appreciable perturbation. But if I see a quantity that was zero, and it should be zero and stay zero in the stationary case, then it's easy to see what's going on. So this is for a bunch of cases, the case where the background fluid has either 10% of the speed of light or 50% of the speed of light, and we're perturbing with 10% of that all the way to 50% of the speed, the background velocity. So the first thing you see is that essentially they come in pairs, except this one because I didn't run that one. But in this one, so one is the corresponds to the velocity, where the background velocity would mean half the speed of light, but the perturbation is with this delta being 0.1, and the other one 0.5 the speed of light, and the same perturbation. And they all have exactly the same, essentially, the growth rate. There is a small difference, and you can explain that by the fact that if you do a Lorentz transformation one, you can get the other one. And the Lorentz factors here are for the 1.2, so, or 1.25, the other one. So you expect this agreement, because actually you can always go to the core moving fluid with the background velocity. And okay, this is actually pretty good. It's just saying that what governs the growth of the perturbation is the size of the growth of the turbulence growth is the size of the perturbation. And also, it saturates. I mean, once it grows to a regime that is sufficiently commensurate with the initial perturbation, as far as the y velocity is concerned, it just stays there. And we evolve for a long time, and there seems to be no decay. Again, the viscous terms here, we do nothing because the scales are very long. Also, the value at which it plateaus has to do with the perturbation itself, which is again consistent with the fact that we could always go to a co-moving frame and you wouldn't see anything.
But when it plateaus, is it homogeneous or is it still as
old? No, it's that structure we saw. And then at some point, the structure, for whatever reason, then turns around and then it goes like this. But this is more interesting. So now, what I do is just take one of those cases, and it's not very clear perhaps from here, but the only thing I'm doing is I'm changing the size of the box. And the larger the size of the box, the lower or the smaller the slope is. So if I take the limit of L going to infinity, then there is no growth of turbulence. So that's all good.
So you mean you take L to infinity?
If you take L to infinity?
The structure you showed
us? Yeah, this one just will come down to zero.
So in the movie, what would we see?
Yeah, it will just stay as the initial stationary state. Imagine this small perturbation just traveling.
So you're saying turbulence is a finite sensitivity?
In this, yeah. In this case,
was the wavelength of the perturbation, I mean, is it still whatever 2 pi over L, or there was some?
So we changed different values. So we try 2, 4, 5, 8, and in all cases, so you're going to qualitatively you get exactly the same here.
When you stretch the box, are the number of oscillations in your perturbation the same for each of those runs?
Initially, they are exactly the same. So you put an L equal 4 supported on that box.
Right.
So
the box is getting bigger, but
and so is the wavelength of the perturbation.
Yeah.
So this at least is consistent. At least this result seems to be consistent. So if I imagine a stationary solution on the bulk, I have a black brain. I know the quasi-neural modes. They all decay. Then I would expect this because you don't see. I don't understand from at least the bulk picture how this is going to grow. But then I get confused with the next result. Let me just change to the R problem. So now we're going to do it thinking on the global front. Now the problem we have to deal with is that you're going to have fluid living on the sphere. For that, we need to introduce several patches because, of course, a single one cannot cover the whole sphere. And we'll just use this structure where you basically, for simplicity, even though it looks complicated, you actually map the sphere onto 6 Cartesian patches that overlap at points. So essentially, but they don't overlap. So there are different techniques where you just have grids that come on top of each other. Here, you just have a single point along each line that coincides with 1 or 2 more grids. And then you have to do some fancy way to communicate these modes using something called penalty techniques. And so this code is much more complicated. I wouldn't suggest anyone go try to do this without some amount of alcohol in your blood. So the setup here is pretty much the same. We're thinking, what are the stationary solutions that are dual to Kerr-Schwarzschild? OK, so then you have no velocity on the stator direction. You have some velocity if you're dual to Kerr on the phi direction. And then the density is just like t cubed. And we're going to perturb it in much the same way. We're going to imagine that we change this u phi to something like this, where we multiply with a small delta and some L structure with m equals 0. And we're considering here, again, if we want to look for the hydrodynamic description, we want T times the typical scale in the system. But now we have a typical scale, it's the size of the sphere. So T has to be much larger than 1, because I'm keeping L to be 1. And we're considering 3.5, 22, and 10 to the 3. And the reason we consider this is that we just take this as a proxy to kind of say that this actually gives you results that are qualitatively the same as that one. So it's not not a bad approximation. It's not bad even when the temperature is not too much larger than 1. We're going to consider velocities of this type, and so I'll show you what we see. Oh, let me just first get you dizzy again. So let me start with Schwarzschild. I'm going to show you the vorticity first. This is a case where the background velocity, so there is no background velocity, there's a small perturbation, and there's an L equal 4 perturbation. And L equal 10 perturbation, sorry. And the small perturbation is of order 10 to the minus 1. And the temperature is about 3.3. This is one of these cases. So that initially very smooth structure begins to develop all these vortices. the vortices will slowly find a way to combine themselves. And essentially, we're going to end up with four vortices along the equator that are kind of oscillating around.
Do you get four vortices if you've got four patches and there's numerical error?
Say again?
Do you get four vortices because there are four patches on the equator and there's numerical error?
No, because I can show you, I doubt that has anything to do with it. And as soon as we put any velocity, those four vortices will be gone.
So here you started with L equals to 4.
No, I just started with L equal to 10. So I misspoke. L equal to 10, and it comes down. And I'll show you how it comes down.
So it comes down to 4 vortices.
Yeah. I can show you, let's say, this one, and it's an L equal 11.
So I guess the obvious question is why 4 is important here.
But they also look like
in the random place.
No, well, that would be true if it were the case that in the Carrot case, we also get 4. But we don't get 4. We actually get 2. And then we start with different L perturbations, and there is a cascade. You would describe the vorticity is something that has to be, there's a constant related to the vorticity.
I already see 4. There are four things going around.
We have, cases where.
And we didn't start with L equal 4.
This is L equal 11.
So why does 4 show up all the time?
But they look like they're.
Wait.
And it's the not just that you've got 4, but they're in each box.
Yeah.
No, they move around. That's
no,
not
no,
true.
No,
they actually move around.
Yeah,
and here, actually, you're going to see it here, and then it's going to begin to move.
Yeah.
No, because I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with the grid.
But each box looks. I'm not saying they can't move around, but I'm just saying there is a striking resemblance between the different boxes.
Sure.
What is the end of
how comes
there is a perfect symmetry between these four objects?
Wait, okay, you want to see.
But what is the m of your initial perturbation? Is that like
m equals 0?
So maybe you should not align your perturbation with the axis of the ball, right? Because you're choosing
actually
the sphere in the same way that you put the perturbation with the same axis. Just choose some spherical harmonic, like
it's an m equals to 0.
It's an m equals to 0.
But
there
is
why,
right?
If
it's
just
the
axis, you should be able to get it in such a way that it doesn't align with the grid at all, and then
it
would probably see the same thing.
It might be on the effective rotated axis.
We can
do that. I don't have any doubt that this is going to be there. And this is an equal 10. And what's doing, remember there's curvature here, so this is all taken into account. So this striking thing that is four patches, there is an artifact of the visualization. You have to wrap this around, and anyway, so.
But it could be that. Could be that your initial perturbation is aligned,
it's aligned
in the box, so that's why it looks.
But also, there is a quantity that's related to the vorticity that has to be globally conserved. So you cannot have a single one. If you have one of one sign, you have to have the R one from the R side. And it would be strange to have just two here. But when there is rotation, overall rotation, it's these guys will move to the top.
So you have a Z4 symmetry there, right? in the flow Y.
Well, the initial data doesn't have an M equals 0. Does not have an M. And the evolution does not break the M equals the non-zero M. Right? So you preserve the M equals 0 structure.
There's a Z4 symmetry. Naively. Is there not enough?
And your grid has a C4 symmetry.
So that's the stay there when you have rotation. And you'll see what happens when there is rotation. So this is what we see. For instance, this is for. When it comes out, you're going to be seeing the energy spectra. So we compute the energy. The energy also has some multipolar structure. And we can see how, in this case, initially we have an L equal 10. And then, interestingly, the L gets transferred to longer scales, and it goes by 2. So we start with L equal 10, then at some point you see L equal 8, and then at the late stages you have L equal 4. But there were other cases. This
so
for
there
the
is
energy.
No L equal 2 in the pool?
There is no L equal 2 here. It didn't cascade all the way to L equal 2 because you end up with these 4 blobs. This for the vorticity. Again, this on L equal 2 at the end. This is an L equal 2 at the end. And you have the same cascading effect for this particular case. And similarly, now we take the magnitude of the spatial part of the velocity, and this one cascades all the way to L equal 2. Well, when it started with L equal, L equal 12.
So what exactly is the coefficient
CL in the y-axis? No, this is just you do a transformation to decompose the spherical harmonic coefficients. And in some cases, it can be normalized, in some cases, you're not. And then you're just plotting what all of them are and how they behave over time. Just to highlight that this cascade, you're indeed going to higher and higher, to lower and lower L's as time goes by. But so if judging from the movies or judging from these plots, it's not clear to how short the time scale the growth of the instability is. So it's again easier to just look at the theta component of velocity, and you see, I mean, at a much shorter scale, you see it taking off exponentially just as before, and then it saturates.
So it's exponential, but it's not there in the Navier Stokes at the linear level.
No. So the linear level
is
just a nonlinear effect. So let me just switch now and show you the rotating case. So some examples of the rotating case. Let's take a look at that one. So now there's a rotation in the fluid of about 0.08. So it's 0.08. We perturb with a small portion of 0.05 times an y10.0. And now this going on, there is some modulation, so the vortices begin to form, but they are dragged around by the background velocity. And now things are going to be different from what we just saw in the non-rotating case. So you have these jumping rabbits here, or froggies. This I can
work. So the note and the subtle are different now.
Right, because now you have these drugs. And also there is a little bit, they are different, but there is a little bit of the visualization kind of tends to show easier towards the purple than towards the reddish. But yeah, there is definitely a difference.
Can I have the bag?
And so in some cases, just as a few comments, depending on the velocity of the background flow, you either fully develop turbulence, or turbulence is always competing with the background that drags it around. So the vortices do not seem to have enough time to merge together and generate larger and larger structure. It is taking a lot longer. The faster the background velocity is. But here now, I mean, those initial 4 things are gone. They have recombined. They're beginning to move towards the poles. Here's where you notice that obviously here there is definitely an asymmetry. You almost don't have anything here. Let me see if I can show you one more, and then we can move around.
And this one also reaches a steady state.
Say again?
This one also reaches a steady state.
Yeah, then this one's just steady. I'm not saying steady. I would say very long-lived state. So
the vortices on
the vortices are staying there for very, very long times. where it decays. I mean, I'll show you some, you know, some plots of this vorticity versus time, energy versus time, and we can see that there is a sort of saturation. But then in some cases, you can see very slow decay of energy. Sometimes just the scale, because the scale was constant, and then you begin to have very small variations, and then the scale. I haven't fixed the scale, just to annoy France, I think.
So the perturbation is not doing anything.
So obviously now, for your point, Jorge, definitely there is a very high L here. So it seems that you go to high L's and then you can't turn around and then.
So that's the point. I think when you go to this description might just not work. It takes you out of there.
Your description.
No, the other way around. Remember, gravity. You better not do
the study.
It's a simple thing to do, right? Generics behavior takes you out of the pool
first.
Well, in some cases, it looks like it goes and then begins to come back.
Right.
But you still are talking about very small scale.
No, but I think, I mean, look, what might happen is that it goes towards high L's first, breaks down. You can no longer use this to describe gravity. And then, because we just have this system equation, it goes the other way.
Why can't I?
Because you're outside the hydro regime. If you go towards higher
L. We start with a T times L that is much larger than 1. The hydro regime is fine there. I mean, we have cases, so this is, again, this was had a background velocity that was much, much faster. So it takes longer to realize, and then it begins to take off. But it will take a longer time for the vortices to form because you're dragged around by the background fluid. Yeah, so I don't quite agree with that statement. I think, because I have examples here where, I mean, the temperature is 1,000, and we still see the same thing. Let me just show this one, and we're done. Okay, this is a very early one, and here you have all these jumping things, and some have different velocities. And again, if you wait long enough, you're going to have these vortices forming and end up moving towards the pole.
So you don't always see first the cascade towards high L and then to low.
No, well, it's hard to see. I mean, in some cases, you see it going very quickly to higher L's. In other ones, it might show this. But it depends on what the initial perturbations are. Sometimes, even doing L equal 10 or L equal 11, you see a significant difference before they go into this kind of attractive configuration. Okay, so this, now let me give you this example. So this is actually one that is pretty clear, although the plot doesn't show it that well. We start with some initial perturbation that was an L equal 11. For some reason, this shows a different color. So it starts here, then it quickly comes down, and then you begin to see this one dominates, then that one dominates, and finally that one. And so you're jumping L equal 11, 9, 7, 5, and then you settle into 3. And that's not an L equal 4. This for a different case, L equal 10. This is a lower temperature. And again, towards the end, that settles in L equal 4, even though it started with L equal 10.
But it looks like you started with L equal 10, but also with some other L.
Yes, because we are perturbing. We don't start with the stationary solution. We're perturbing the stationary solution. There is Federico has also found that for that general perturbation we start with the velocity, you can resolve asking for a stationary solution what is the structure of the temperature would be. We don't start with, in this case, we're starting with a uniform temperature. You can actually have a temperature that depends on the angle theta, in which case you have a clean mode, but that one is that solution, even though it's stationary, is completely unstable. Just the perturbation takes it off. So it's just a solution, a stationary solution, but it's totally unstable. And again, for this case, we can plot the theta component and clearly see the exponential takeoff, and the time scale is much shorter. So it's there. So I would say, well, just to conclude, there are some final words or maybe questions. So Kurt, I know understand, I knew nothing about turbulence 6 months ago. I know almost the same now. but it's clear that turbulence shows up in this 2 plus 1 conformal fluid and in relativistic hydrodynamics, just as the standard physics would have told us. We have, of course, now look at the 3 plus 1 case. That would require a much fancier code, and it, because the expectation would be that if it cascades to smaller scales, it would be much more difficult, much more costly to run. But just the fact that, again, the Kolmogorov, why did we expect the 2 plus 1 picture in the standard physics to apply here? It's just because the Kolmogorov arguments are very clean. And there was no doubt in my mind that this should have showed up, and it's good to see it. So then there is no doubt in my mind that we shouldn't do the 3 plus 1 case because it's much more expensive, and we would expect qualitatively the same that we know from the Newtonian case in the 3 plus 1, that it's a cascade to lower to higher L's rather than lower L's. So for the 2 plus 1 case, the turbulence goes to the largest case. If we're thinking of Poincaré patch, we see that the growth rate will go to zero, so it would be irrelevant for the Poincaré patch, likely, but it wouldn't be. But it is relevant for the global case. And this long-lived structure develops. So it looks like there is perhaps some quasi-stationary regime or something that is very, very long-lived. And maybe that's one way to connect to this dimensionality dependence, that the centrifugal barrier in the 3 plus 1, the dual to the 2 plus 1 would be the 3 plus 1 case on the ADS, and maybe the centrifugal barrier would be able to keep this perhaps sort of gions going around the black hole and just stay there for a very long time, where we wouldn't expect that to happen in the 3 plus 1 case. So this, perhaps there is a way to recover some dimensionality dependence there. So the thing that bugs me is what the connection with known instability. So at a very linear level, we know we expect quasi-normal modes to be a basis, though no one has pointed me to a theorem that says so. And so then why is it that we just do a very small perturbation at a limit where we expect this duality to apply? And then I see this thing taking off exponentially. Of course, it's a nonlinear effect. But then it's telling me that the quasi-normal mode is not capturing everything. And then it renders it dubious to what extent we can use it to estimate what's going to happen. And again, these instabilities have been pointed out. We do not seem to care about the dimensionality. So perhaps what it's telling us is that there is something in the ADS bulk on the gravity here that we haven't yet uncovered. And so that would be interesting. So we're looking for it. So I'll stop here. Thank you.
So thank you for compensating for the overrun of the previous speaker. We have time for questions.
Could you teach once again why the growth rate goes to zero in that point, right?
So this is just a completely numerical result, right? So what we do is we put the same perturbation for a box of a given size, and then just we increase the size of the box. And then we compute the growth rate that we see in the exponential behavior that the orthogonal velocity shows. And that one keeps going to zero. So what we see is that the growth rate is a constant that essentially depends on the perturbation that you put in divided by the size of the box. But then if I take the size of the box to infinity, that will go to zero.
But effectively, the perturbation gets washed out. If you take L equals infinity, then the perturbation is a constant.
For that point, yeah, but I, okay.
Take a fixed wavelength perturbation on an incident box.
Yeah, if you kept your waves and then just added flat parts.
That we haven't done.
Very different story.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I should have done that, but no. We haven't done it. I'll check on that.
Yeah, no. I think it'll have to do with the wavelength. And, although L equals infinity is going to be different because if you have a localized perturbation, it's got an infinite amount of space that is dissipating.
Right. So there, I think that is, we will try to get to the highest possible, the most homogeneous configuration you can, and then it will just wash away and give me again.
There'll be an intermediate regime where you should see this stuff.
Yeah, so that what it doesn't realize that it's in the big L. But I mean, one thing that it's here.
I mean,
so if I look at
periodic boundary conditions, isn't it the same as just repeating this story many times? Why can't I think it's just infinite?
Yeah, but you're keeping the periodicity. So you could imagine that it's infinite. But you have put something by hand there that limits the highest L structure that you can have. So this is similar to the Gregor-Laflamme instability. You can imagine it at infinite, but somehow you go in and you put a filter that any mode that is larger than something, you're going to kill it.
But you would still see the first phase. Then you don't let it grow more than the size of the box.
Sure.
But until there,
yeah, you would see
exactly
that.
The same as in Plattsburgh.
But one thing going back to that question, Rob, so even though, I believe that, so well, maybe we can extrapolate and go to zero, but here, this was 100 crossing times before you saw the growth rate going. So we have to see how long it takes for it to fully develop. But it probably also, the fact that we don't see it, this is limited by the precision of the numerical scheme. Right? This was part of the noise. And maybe if I extrapolate back, so they would say, well, they were growing all the way from the beginning. But this is something that needs to be investigated.
The higher the rate of detail is large, the rate of number is large.
Yep. So you should see more. But all of this is within the turbulent regime, right? But yeah, you're right. The higher the L.
You have viscosity at the size of the grid. So the larger the but you put the bigger box, but you keep the grid size the same.
That's right. The grid size was always the separation between points is effectively always the same. So as I increase the grid size, I also increase the grid.
So if
you increase the box, I increase the grid.
You have double points.
Exactly.
Yes, so you have a larger range of lambda because the viscosity is always at the grid size, which is the same. And now
right, but the viscosity will play a role when we're going to shorter wavelengths. Here,
yeah,
you're going in the opposite direction.
Size, yeah, the grid size is big.
But initially,
yeah, but it's far there. When we're starting a perturbation here and we go in that direction, the viscosity would show up over there if I go in that direction.
But initially, you seem to go
in some of them.
It's clear that you go first in
but there's direction. No, but there's absolutely lots of time. So it's not the effective resolution of that sphere is humongous.
So let me see if I understand. So we usually say that on a sphere, we have no hydrodynamics because there's a gap. And you're saying here that because the temperature is really high.
On the sphere, we don't have hydrodynamics?
Well, there's no hydrodynamics on a sphere just because modes are gapped.
Like our Earth is a sphere, right?
Yeah, so what do you mean?
Consider the radius of the sphere that is extremely large,
relative to the temperature.
You're saying here that you're taking the temperature, you fix the size of the sphere, and,
we just keep increasing the temperature so that you always are larger, and then you, in this theme that higher dynamics works better than you expected. So we started with the 300 case, and we come down to 3, and you don't see a change.
I just don't understand what you were keeping fixing. You're keeping the size of the sphere fixed, taking the
temperature.
Yeah.
No, I think the temperature doesn't matter. What matters is the size of the grid. So you are using the ideal tile, so you are not putting the viscosity. So
that's right. So viscosity is,
but the grid size is
the grid length, effective length. Is at L equal 100 here,
yeah, so
and we put L equal 10.
Be large, so the size of the sphere compared to the grid size, not with the temperature. So the temperature doesn't do anything.
Well, yeah, then there are two or three orders of magnitude in between.
What I'm saying that it's not the temperature being large. It's the temperature being large.
There
will be possible to
compare, yeah.
So you don't have any dissipation here?
So that goes to Martin's question. So there is numerical dissipation. We've tried without dissipation or with dissipation put by hand, which is not the viscous terms that you would get from the duality. That's because I want to deal with a system that you understand better. And I just said, without dissipation, with dissipation put by hand, and different values of it, you see the same behavior.
Okay.
So dissipation is not playing a role here.
What I'm confused about is that presumably your claim would be that if I do a simulation on the dual gravity side, I start with, for example, let's take the Poincaré case, right?
Well, the Poincaré case is this
no,
is a delicate one.
Take it and you compactify the two directions. That's perfectly okay. You have the black brain solution. You put this perturbation. You let it go. And what you're saying is that this thing has this crazy behavior that doesn't settle down.
Yes.
Which in gravity is very weird because
absolutely.
I would expect everything to eventually fall through the horizon.
That's not necessarily true, right? I think you have good evidence that whenever you compactify your space, if you start with Schwarzschild AVS, for instance, in global coordinates, then we would say, well, there's smaller and smaller black holes being created outside. It's an absolute mass, right? That was part of my talk. As if you could compactify Poincaré, you probably get some similar behavior. The issue.
No, here's the difference between right. So here,
yeah,
what we're saying is
the
at the nonlinear level. So, take home messages. There is something missing in everything we
right.
know, of course, at the linear level. And one is what them and Bisson Rothrowski point out. And my gut feeling is there is something else that we haven't uncovered. So we have to go fishing for it. I mean, it is telling me there is something that knows all the dimensions, and
but,
we don't see it.
But my comment was not related to the linear approximation. And it's also not related to Bisson Rothrowski, because what I'm saying is you already start with a black hole. So once you have the horizon.
But their claim is that if they have a black hole, they have that thing.
If it's perturbed, it meets gravitational radiation.
Their
so
gravitational radiation gets stuck outside from the black hole.
It's not top.
He hasn't put the absorption of the horizon, and that would be the viscosity.
No,
he's just saying that'll take a very long time to take effect. So there's some kind of exciting physics that happens outside of the horizon,
right.
And it's only very slowly going to
Right, but in the dissipation, again, the dissipation plays a role if you probe the very small scales efficiently. At very large scale, dissipation plays a very subleading role.
So large wavelength or large?
Large wavelength plays no. So you want very short wavelength. That's the one that begins to know about the viscous scale. And here, this way, I think there is a very different behavior that you would expect in 4 plus 1 gravity versus 3 plus 1 gravity. Because this would be telling you that the higher dynamics in 2 plus 1 wants to take you to longer wavelengths, therefore less and less sensitive to the viscous term. While in the 3, when the 4 plus 1, you're going to go in the opposite direction, you're going to encounter it. But then you have two sources of viscosity. You can form black holes, smaller black holes, and then you steal energy from
it. It can't be ours, because ours does not go in the same way that yours does.
That's right. So there seems to be something else.
It has to be something else.
And I don't know what it is.
Neither.
So can I ask a question?
Ahead.
I'm confused about this fact that you're saying that you're in a turbulent regime. In some way, presumably you're checking because you can see the energy cascade, but you're not seeing the stationary state. So I'm trying to see where this new physics comes in.
We're not seeing the stationary state. What we're seeing is,
well,
for instance, in the rotating case,
yeah.
You form these vortices. These vortices stay there. If I evaluate things like, I mean, this is not the right quantity, but if I evaluate things like the energy, the vorticity that I have, it's almost a flat line. Perhaps with very, very long evolutions, you're going to begin to see a very small decrease. And then numerically, then that becomes delicate because you want to make sure that after 10 to the 6 time steps, your numerics is not beginning to affect that. But what I'm saying, at least for very long time scales, seems things to be energetically and distributionally, as far as where the vortices are, indicating there is a very slowly, at worst, solution that would describe, say, a black hole with two, perhaps, gions, because there is nothing else in the gravity. There is, you are floating around.
Oh, actually, just a silly question. Have you tried to see them? So here you have a time, you have a certain time until there's something interesting happen. Have you tried to see the scaling with the amplitude?
The scaling with
the amplitude,
amplitude
of your perturbation. This time where this settles,
so,
scales with the size of the amplitude.
So here there is a problem. So to probe this, you have to be careful, because at some point, this is what we're talking when Rob asked a related question. Your resolution can only give you so much. So there is a noise level, and this noise level here is set at this value.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have seen is that for different values of perturbation, then the slope changes. But you only see taking off from here. This gives you your background noise. So in principle, if you were to extend this one, it's coming from there. But you don't see it because it's hidden in your noise.
So you cannot get the scaling of when the onset of this instability happens with the amplitude of the wave you put in.
No, but I could tell you, if we agree that whenever we hit this value of 10 to the minus 6, say, we're going to call it halfly developed turbulence.
No, do something
then,
like that.
Then
yeah.
we can estimate that based on the perturbation. It tells you the perturbation, the
right.
size of the perturbation will tell how rapid how the growth rate
that
is.
That would be extremely cool to see the time it takes
to reach
number,
a particular
your
value.
Favorite number, and then
yeah,
see how it varies with the amplitude.
I'm telling you, this goes like an exponential to that perturbation you put in.
Okay.
divided by the size of.
So if the perturbation is small, it goes like epsilon squared t or something like that.
It goes like e. No, well, I haven't done this for this case, but for the torus, it goes like e to the epsilon t. Epsilon relative.
Sorry, I think you have
I mean, you say that you don't know what this corresponds to in the bulk, but if you're really within the hydrodynamic regime, you have the bulk. We are able to reconstruct the bulk from the for any solution to the fluid equations that's within the range of approximations. So you should be able to see what kind of hair or long-lived hair.
Right. So from this log, for the kind of late stages where I see this, so that. It looks like the bulk is a black hole with some geons floating around.
Was it just the
fluid side.
But isn't that just a rotating black hole in the bulk?
So in addition to the rotating black hole, you have a black hole that is hotter at the poles.
Yeah.
Isn't that just because it's rotating and it's not spherical?
No, the rotation will have, it's a smooth rotation.
It doesn't have to be clear, that's his point. You can still have a single black hole that's not included.
Right. So we know the solution.
I think Kerr is uniform.
But if I have. But let's say it's not Kerr.
It's not Kerr, what it is.
It's an out of equilibrium.
Right, but then you're talking about it's a black hole out of equilibrium with some L structure that is very low. That gets killed by quasi-null modes.
No, I have another comment on here. The map to gravity is stable. I think it 2+1 dimensions in the boundary, because it takes you to longer wavelengths, it doesn't take you out of hydrodynamics.
Right.
So you should expect that you should be able to see this on the gravity side. But if you are now in 3+1 in the boundary,
yeah.
It will take you to shorter and shorter wavelengths, so outside hydrodynamics. And therefore, the completion of that will be gravity on the other side.
But that's
so gravity. I don't think you should expect to see the same behavior that you see at the boundary on the gravity side.
But my claim is that don't wait for this one. Don't wait for this stage. Just think here. Because here we don't understand what's going on.
I don't know what
but the onset and in which direction does it go, it will be different.
Yeah.
So I can
mean eventually the behavior that you will find in the boundary will deviate from what you find on the gravity side because you're exiting hydrodynamics.
Great, but before that, I have a problem.
But you can control that by taking the temperature. It's really, I think it was Toby said the other day, it's an expansion in wavelength over temperature. And so, where did I get that wrong?
L times T.
But by making the temperature larger and larger, the amount of time I believe his simulation is accurate should just
be longer and longer.
Get longer and longer.
But that just means it takes longer and longer to get to the same behavior with this breakdown.
No, because I just told you that it doesn't depend much on the temperature, the place where this settles. That's what it just told me.
But then if we use this map to start
I think we're agreeing eventually it breaks down, but you should still see all sorts of interesting.
There's something
no, but what you're saying, what I don't agree with is that you're saying that by taking the temperature higher and higher, I can capture more and more physics in the boundary theory before hydrodynamics breaks down, and I don't agree.
Well, for a given wavelength where you depart, if you take a higher temperature, you're not you can get yourself back into the safe zone, right? Because as we were saying, it's T times lambda much larger than one. So I mean, if lambda gets me in a, it's one over T, fine, then I take a larger temperature.
I'm just gonna see the same physics until the breakdown point.
Sure. If you were, but he's asking when the, or he's pointing out that when that breakdown point exists, is you can push it further and further down the road in time.
But I'm just stretching the physics that I'm seeing.
Sure.
I'm not going to see new physics as I keep increasing the temperature.
I agree, but
you've got a box now. He set a scale in the problem, or he set two scales. One is the size of his box, and the other is the temperature. And so within his box, he can probe shorter and shorter wavelengths. As long as the temperature is sufficiently high, that's what we're saying.
But none of this depended on the box, right? I mean, you could have. That's a problem of computation. But you could have, in principle, taken an infinite fluid and so taken some
initial
data, and so I think.
But these simulations, Yeah, you can do that in your laptop. But
if I don't have that scale, then it's a conformal problem, and maybe that's what David's intuition is. You can always.
It's not conformal if there's a temperature.
But the theory is, I can scale the temperature.
I'm afraid I disagree because you have this
with statement.
With the fact that I agree with you.
You fix
the size of the box.
Let's do
that. Okay. Then you take the temperature higher and higher.
Yeah.
So once the temperature becomes the dominant high energy scale, the only thing that matters is the wave vector you're looking at or the momentum in units of the temperature. It becomes a conformal theory again. So what are you going to gain by increasing the temperature? You can just set it to
where is hydro going to break down? It breaks down.
There's only one way. K over T is over the one. Where K over T.
Sure.
Where K over T becomes over the one.
And so that's a smaller and smaller fraction of this box size. So I'll see more and more interesting structure within the box.
No, but in that case, we can just set the size of the box to infinity.
Yeah, it's not related to the box. It's just on his picture on the screen.
But don't you agree, if it's not related to the box, we might just as well put it in an infinite box, right? So the only scale then is the temperature.
My screen isn't that big.
Yeah, suppose the box is smaller than 1 over T, then clearly there is a problem.
Maybe it's just a perspective, but on that screen, I will be able to point to smaller and smaller, or his simulation will have smaller and smaller structures. And it won't be when it's 1/10 the size of the screen that I'll say, oh, that's wrong. It'll go down to the pixel size of, by picking the temperature high enough, it'll go down to the pixel size of our projector, and the simulation and gravity will still be of agreement.
I'm trying to get people sick before lunch.
Aren't these equations that you saw precisely the equations that control the dynamics of the horizon?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Of the entire thing.
It's the entire thing.
In the hydrodynamic, isn't it basically just fluctuations of the horizon?
You have stuff outside the horizon.
So this is almost a picture of the horizon.
The horizon and whatever is in between the horizon and the boundary.
If you have hair,
it's got to be close, fairly close to the horizon. If it's very high, then it's not going to be in the.
But going back to your point, Toby, so if it's not care, it's care with the uniform, so care with some structure.
It's highly wrong.
Okay, because then I can use a quaternary mode structure and say, well, this is going to be close.
Can I or make another suggestion, which if you go to the power spectrum graphs, you were writing a CL, so that's like our friends in the CMB, that's what they're writing.
We're not using the same basis, but what we're saying is you just take your whatever quantity, say your vorticity, and you decompose it in terms of spherical harmonics.
Right, and you sum over M.
Well, there's M stays zero.
M
stays zero, so yes, but
M stays zero.
There is no M equals zero. When it's fully developed, yeah, we sum over zero. We sum over M. We sum over M, and we just plot CL.
Refine it then to keep M in there. I mean, this alarming symmetry that some people around me were talking about, you're going to see that M equals 4 is going to jump out at you.
Yeah.
But somehow that, maybe it's Toby's enthusiasm. I think that must be somehow out of the noise of your grid that's coming out.
What do you mean out of the noise of the grid?
But the perturbation had M equals 4 or not?
Had
M equals 0.
M equals 0.
M equals 0.
But turbines will do whatever.
But there really is this. The first structures that develop really have this M equals 4.
maybe you need.
But M equal 4, you're saying you worry that the numerical error with source error, the numerical error is way, way smaller than that. I mean, this sphere, so M equal 4 is pretty neat. When you're worried, you would worry about M equal 400. M equal 4 is fine.
Personally, you can increase the resolution and you've
done it. Yeah, yeah. We increase the resolution, we double the resolution, and the structure is still there. M equal 4 is just something that varies, it speaks four times at most. And we have around that 400 points. So you have plenty of points to represent that
curve. Resolution, it's a question of whether there's some.
There is, so going back to, I think George, who just left, there is one thing. So the grid sources a particular noise structure.
Right.
And you're sourcing that M equal 4 for this,
that's,
for the grid.
That's what I.
But that would be the forcing function in some
exactly.
sense. But I should
so,
say that.
So some numerical noise sets up your initial.
Right, but that's the forcing function. From there on, the solution goes wherever it wants to go.
Right, yeah. No, but so but if you set up a grid with.
M equal 8, 8 patches or something.
You would see a distinctive 8-fold symmetry or 6-fold symmetry or whatever.
Once the noise starts, but then
okay,
sure.
But that's okay. So.
But that's but it's disturbance. You're just putting some seed.
But that doesn't tell what the final thing is.
Okay, but you agree that somehow it's the way you set up the problem that.
There is a forcing function with an
equal.
Yeah.
But there is a very simple way to check this, right? Just put the horizon rotating.
Sure. What would, again, when we put a little bit of rotation, the M equal 4 is gone. We go to an M equal 2. And then M equal 2 translates to essentially M equal 0.
But even the M equal 2 started with this 4. The first perturbation is always.
Right, but you see the perturbation, but then from there on, turbulence will just go.
Yeah,
I would like
to see this 4 appearing like in some random place.
Sure.
I didn't understand why you were so happy that the rotating and the non rotating look different. In that, why can't I just undo the rotation the same way you undid the velocity?
Why can I not undo in the torus case? You're saying?
Well, in the torus case, you said, let's just unboost, which. You know, strictly speaking, that's not kosher if it really is a torus, but for small boosts, that's okay. But in the same way, I would have thought for small rotation, I can just think that I'm going to undo that rotation and I should see the same effect.
But there is an effective Coriolis force that is coming from the fact that you have things on a sphere and a rotation. I don't think you could undo that. I mean, I have to think about it, but my gut feeling is to say no, but I have to.
And you have higher energy density at the pole, is what you find, right?
Yeah. Well, you have to take a look at it.
Yes. I mean, if it's higher energy density.
I have the vortices. The vortices are leaving at the pole.
Now,
so I have to take a look at the temperature.
Yeah, because that would be important, right? And you would expect lower temperature, lower energy densities near the pole.
Sure. Now, I have to check.
Yeah, the energy density should be lower. At the pole. That's
what
I expect to for
GM.
Oh, wait, let me see.
So you expect that fluid to become thinner near the pole.
Wait, I think I have. Yeah, here I have it. Wait, I do have the board. It's more psychedelic. But yeah, so this is the temperature plot. And yeah, your higher temperature, the slightly higher temperature, ever so slightly, on the equator. And not on the pole.
So then what you're seeing is that the black hole is kind of
hot on the,
closer to the boundary near the equator and farther from the boundary near the pole.
Okay, from that.
It's kind of pinching.
Pinching?
Pinching.
Well, flattening.
Flattening. I prefer to think of.
Okay.
Pinching is a very technical thing now.
You think it will actually like.
I don't know. It might.
Why? This is 3+1.
In
2
5
plus
dimensions.
This is 3+1. This is 3+1.
This is 3+1 bulk. Yeah. No. So you're not going to pinch or not to pinch off.
Yeah.
You're going to flatten.
So, but here you.
But from this point, you have a cloud of gravitons.
There's a cloud of gravitons
going around
along the equator.
But a cloud of gravitons is not the thermal. It's giving you higher energy.
Well, but I mean, in very, very long time scales, this might decay. One thing is to be.
They have to be close to the horizon.
Sorry?
They're not going to be at a large distance.
But why can't you have a black hole with a single killing field? There's a cloud of gravitons outside.
Okay, this cloud of gravitons, how far is it from the horizon? Because if it's very far from the horizon, then I'm going to be away from the hydrodynamical regime. It has to be close to the horizon.
No, right, but it. But
so it's not clear that it's going to be a geon. It's going to be.
No. I don't care.
No,
what
geon
what
means it's not a separate entity from the horizon.
Right,
but separate, then it's not hydrodynamic.
Yeah, but then I'm confused because then why can I not use quaternary modes to describe the situation? Look at the difference in temperature. You cannot see the difference. It's very, very tiny. So something has to support it.
It can be still far from
the... just 6 to
6. It can be a very, highly distorted horizon. But,
it's not very highly distorted, right? Because the temperature variation is very small.
Why wouldn't it settle down via radiation of this one?
Well, it's in ADA. But it has somehow... But it has to want to keep that here.
I mean, why does it grow exponentially?
But what was the...
this is her.
What was the...
What is what? Sorry, this is for short.
It doesn't.
So that's orbital, and
that's
but what was the? There's some extra fluid velocity around the equator.
That was for the this. No, the previous one was Kerr. This is short.
Oh, this is short.
This is short. This is the one I cannot watch.
But what was the initial perturbation? An extra flow around the equator.
Right, no, so on the equator. What you do is you have the flow and you just modify the velocity of the flow. So some pieces of the fluid are going faster than the other one. You're trying to create it with eddies.
Okay, but you're saying it all washes out anyway. So.
But what is the difference in temperature scale? Is this just a little truncation error? Or?
No, there's a difference. I think we have some other plots.
The scale is here. Is this
so
an energy again?
This is the temperature.
But the scale goes from 1.58 to 1.58.
Yeah, but I mean, we can take a look at some numbers below that, but it's just a small difference.
But it's not truncation.
It's definitely not truncation. I mean, it's there.
Right.
And remember, this is the same simulation that we had the vortices going around.
Yeah.
And the vortices
are exponential rules.
So that is
I think we're done.
Some music.
So it looks like